for the elders that are willing to open up, I'd be very interested in hearing about the changes you've seen on the landscape, how that's impacted your subsistence.
Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and Alaska lawmakers hear of change and struggle from residents in Kivalina. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska Native mushing legend George Atla has died. Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Instead of Juneau or Anchorage, for 2 days, the Northwest Arctic Borough is suddenly Alaska's seat of power, with the governor, the lieutenant governor, the congressional delegation, and 10 legislators all descending on the region. But the most high-profile visitor is Sally Jewell, Secretary of the Interior and a member of President Barack Obama's cabinet. While Jewell had long planned to appear at an Alaska Federation of Natives board retreat in Kotzebue, the visit became more political after Obama announced his plan to prohibit drilling in a good swath of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and certain offshore areas. Many of Alaska's lawmakers were motivated to come up to the region to confront her on these actions. But Jewell had her own agenda for the visit and started off in Kivalina. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports from Kivalina.
At 9:30 a.m., Interior Secretary Sally Jewell left the Kotzebue Airport in a Cessna Grand Caravan bound for Kivalina. She was traveling to the barrier island to learn about the effects of climate change on the community. In her wake were about half a dozen legislators who ended up piggybacking on her itinerary.
Welcome to Kivalina. Salut. Welcome to Kivalina.
As Jewell had a private meeting with members of the village council, legislators like House Majority Leader Sharice Millett toured the local school. With the current building over capacity and in a location where it is vulnerable to storms and erosion, Kivalina is requesting money for a new building that would be built on dry ground miles outside the community. And inside the classroom, climate is also on the syllabus.
So the issue today is we're doing environmental science, and one of the things that we've been doing over the last couple of weeks is we've been taking samples out of the ice.
After visiting classrooms, the legislative delegation was brought to the school gym to meet with members of the community, like Eleanor Swan. Swan is up at the front, working a projector that shows violent waves smashing against the town.
When it flooded here in town in 2004, the water got way high and they had to move the principal's house.
Swan is originally from Notak, but she's lived in Kivalina for 29 years.
It changed since I moved. There was more beach when I came here. That's long gone. We hardly have a beach now.
Shortly before noon, the secretary showed up, putting her in the same room as Alaska lawmakers. While legislators had made the trip to talk to Jewell about drilling restrictions on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, they gave her wide berth in the gymnasium. She sat alone until Millie Hawley, the leader of the village council, noted the empty seats next to her.
Where's her staff? She looks so lonely.
Nobody sits next to me. I'm used to it.
After a prayer was said in a mix of Inupiat and English that implored for the survival of Kivalina, Jewell spoke. She kept her comments strictly to climate change. She did not bring up offshore drilling or any other controversial issue that has made her a target for Alaska lawmakers. Instead, she asked to hear about how changing weather patterns were affecting the community's ability to get caribou, whale, and seal.
For the elders that are willing to open up, I'd be very interested in hearing about the changes you've seen on the landscape, how that's impacted your subsistence, where you'd like to see things go for the future.
Jewel then heard from residents who expressed concern about the rate at which village land was disappearing and how declining sea ice and harsher storms had hurt the community. There were no big announcements about funding for Kivalina projects or money for relocation costs, just a general commitment that the federal government would work with them. About halfway through the meeting, the legislative delegation left without approaching Jewel. They had their own plane to catch and a meeting to finally confront her scheduled for later in the day. In Kivalina, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Alaska native dog mushing great George Atla has died. The sprint champion known as the Huslia Hustler died of cancer yesterday at the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage. He was 81. As KUAC's Dan Barras reports, Atla's impact spanned from success in racing to helping village kids connect with mushing.
George Atla Jr. was dominant in sprint mushing for five decades, including years before the Iditarod, when sprint racing was the sport's primary focus and fiercely competitive. Atla won 10 Fur Rendezvous World Championships in Anchorage and 8 Open North American Championships in Fairbanks, with a laser focus he described in a 2013 interview.
I didn't go to the race for any other reasons except to win.
Atla had deep roots in the sport with a leg damaged by tuberculosis. The young Atla used dogs for racing and subsistence activities like fur trapping in the Keokuk River area.
I grew up with it anyway, you know. It's something I love to do, you know. It's a life. Way of life for me.
Atla attributed some of his success in racing to community support and a lineage of great dogs from the Keokuk River region.
There was a lot of pride in the village of the dogs, you know, the dogs that they owned. And we lost all that down through the years.
In recent years, George Atla and other Huslia mushers have tried to restore that with a program that introduces the sport to kids, teaching them to care for, train, and race dogs. A memorial service for George Atla is being held in Fairbanks Tuesday. He will be buried in his home village of Huslia Thursday. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
House Republicans expressed skepticism over Governor Walker's plan to expand Medicaid in a hearing this morning. The subcommittee hearing of the House Health and Social Services Committee was the first chance for lawmakers to publicly question Health Commissioner Valerie Davidson on the subject. APRN's Annie Fite reports.
Medicaid expansion is a complicated topic, and Davidson and lawmakers dug into the details, like reimbursement rates in Alaska and efforts to combat Medicaid fraud. An hour and a half into the hearing, Subcommittee Chair Dan Sadler, a Republican from Eagle River, was ready to ask a bigger picture question.
Given the federal government's debt load that is also projected to increase tremendously over future decades, Commissioner, does it give you any pause for accepting a commitment from the federal government to have a very high rate of reimbursement forever and ever, amen? Does it cause you any concern or cause you to question the wisdom of expanding Medicaid?
The federal government would cover Medicaid expansion at 100% until the end of next year. Then that match gradually decreases to 90% in 2020. The money would pay for health coverage for mostly childless adults who are near or below the federal poverty level. Commissioner Davidson said they are mostly the working poor. And she told Representative Sadler she didn't have a problem accepting federal funds to give them access to health care. She pointed out federal highway funds have a similarly generous match rate.
We can build roads, we can build all kinds of opportunities, but if we don't have Alaskans who are healthy enough to be able to participate in that economy, then we have done ourselves a disservice. And so I am comfortable moving forward with expansion, just as I am comfortable driving on roads that have the potholes replaced at those corresponding matches.
Several other Republican lawmakers on the subcommittee were focused on the opposite argument, that the federal government would pull back on its promise to provide at least 90% of funding for Medicaid expansion. They wanted assurances that Davidson would drop Medicaid expansion if the federal match ever fell below 90%. When Davidson told lawmakers that was the plan, Representative Lance Pruitt, a Republican from Anchorage, said ending expansion was unrealistic.
We'll have to have a discussion about, are we also willing to take up that additional 90-some million potentially after 2020 and have an honest discussion, because I don't think we're ever going to introduce something and ever strip it away, whether we make a legislation, whether we make law, whether we make regulation, it doesn't matter. You're not going to take away health care from Alaskans once we offer it to a bunch of them.
Representative Bryce Edgman, a Democrat from Dillingham, was frustrated the hearing didn't focus more on the benefits of expansion, how it could reduce the state's high rate of substance abuse and help poor Alaskans access preventative medicine. Edgman doesn't think it makes sense to spend so much time focused on whether the federal match rate will remain.
The issues about what happens if the federal government pulls out and can't hold their end of the bargain. I say this sort of tongue-in-cheeks, we have bigger issues in Alaska to worry about, given the fact that a third of our spending in the state is dependent on federal spending.
The budget Governor Walker sent to lawmakers includes a line approving the receipt of federal Medicaid funds. Representative Mark Newman, a Republican from Big Lake, asked the administration to submit a separate bill on Medicaid expansion so it would be the subject of the normal legislative process. The governor's office is not considering that option. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the power of traditional medicine through the eyes of a 40-year practitioner.
Traditional healing integrates well as preventative medicine with allopathic medicine because it encourages people to do something for themselves.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
A statewide group is fighting a proposed change in Alaska's judge selection process pushed by a Fairbanks senator. Justice Not Politics Alaska Director Heather Arnett says the group is opposed to Republican Pete Kelly's resolution, which proposes doubling the number of public members appointed by the governor to the Judicial Council, which selects state judge candidates.
It introduces a major political influence into how judges become judges in Alaska.
Senator Kelly's resolution proposes increasing the number of governor-appointed and legislatively confirmed public members on the Judicial Council from 3 to 6. Senator Kelly was not available for comment. The city of Anchorage is moving forward with implementing a new software system 2 years behind schedule and millions of dollars over its original budget. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, two separate audits presented on Friday convinced the Anchorage Assembly it's too late to start over.
The Assembly approved a $750,000 internal audit by SAP, the company in charge of bringing the new software online. It produced a report hundreds of pages long that left some Assembly members visibly frustrated over how little was actually said. Following a presentation by SAP, the body heard from an independent auditor, Denver-based consulting group Zico, hired to assess where the implementation process is breaking down and whether it's worth continuing with SAP. Zig Berzins heads Zico and spent more than an hour explaining his findings to the Assembly.
We started off by suggesting that the project is definitely a salvageable, completable project and that they should go forward.
Berzins found the SAP project suffers from a lack of accountability, low morale, and poor management of scheduling and resources. He recommends full-time, dedicated staffing, as well as better timelines for completing tasks. And to do that, the city will have to go well beyond its current budget estimates on a project that's already cost nearly $35 million. Assemblymember Bill Evans says the audit confirmed that part of the problem stems from unrealistically low expectations as to how expensive and complex switching to a new payroll and city service software system would be when the project started in 2011.
We have to decide as a group whether we're going to really be all in on this or not, because that's what it's going to take. I mean, in order to do something right, you've got to put the resources to it, a project of this complexity and this size, and just nibbling around the edges and kind of doing it on the half effort leads you to the problems we've had already.
While the Assembly can approve resources going to the project, direct decisions on timelines and staffing come from the Mayor's Administration, which meets on February 27th to discuss next steps. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Works of a famous Fairbanks artist are on display for the first time. Drawings and paintings by Bill Berry are hanging in the University of Alaska Fairbanks Rasmussen Library. KUAC's Karen Simmons reports.
Most people know Bill Berry from a mural he did for the Noel Wayne Library in Fairbanks. The work titled An Alaskan Fairy Tale depicts a parade of storybook characters, a whimsical forest, and a castle. It's locally beloved, but his son Mark Berry says the painting is not completely representative of the larger body of his dad's work.
That was an important part of kind of inside Bill, whereas the field sketches and all of that are things that was Bill Berry, the illustrator of the world around him.
The William D. Berry Papers Collection has been stored at UAF since the artist's death over 35 years ago. Mark guesses most of what's stored artwork is representative of all the time his father spent living and working in the wilderness near his longtime home in the Denali National Park area.
So it's really a bit of a hodgepodge, but it's mostly field sketches. There could easily be 10,000 individual sketches there.
Bill's other son, Paul Berry, says his father's contributions to Alaskan education are so unique that the UAF library is the best place to display his work.
This is the right place for it because a university, you know, in a traditional sense, is kind of a center for kind of how information is kept.
Bill's family and friends wanted to display a selection of what's been preserved as an opportunity to share the newest version of Bill's handbook, William D. Berry Drawing Guides. In Fairbanks, I'm Karen Simmons.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Doyon Limited announcing the 2015 Board of Directors election, encouraging e-proxy or paper proxy submission no later than Tuesday, March 10th before 5 p.m. Information at doyon.com.
Alaska Pacific University is proud to announce the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1, 2015. Alaska Pacific University, a private nonprofit committed to personalized experiential learning that incorporates Alaska as its principal classroom. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
It's just in the planning stage, but the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation is working toward a new building. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more on the effort to build a new $250 million healthcare center in Bethel.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation needs more space. That's true overall and for individual patient rooms. On a recent tour, President and CEO Dan Winkleman explains how hospital rooms would grow and be updated in the proposed expansion.
So we're actually in an existing inpatient room right now, and it's just over 100 square feet, and new rooms are over a couple hundred square feet, so double the size of this. And as you can see, this is a pretty tight room. This was built to 1980 standards, and the standards have increased since then significantly.
Officials say they need more staff to see more patients. They currently have to scramble to clean rooms to prepare for the next round of patients. That slows down care. Their emergency room is at its limit and sees 22,000 patients per year, more than Anchorage's Alaska Native Medical Center. Vice President for Support Services Newton Chase says the size of the proposed project demonstrates the need.
Really what it shows is what the deficit we've been working under for so many years in providing great care here, but with the sort of a hands tied behind our backs. The facilities are way outdated. The standards are much improved.
The expansion would more than double the number of beds in the ER and prepare the Tribal Health Corporation for projected growth in the YK Delta. That's from about 23,000 Alaska Native health beneficiaries to 30,000 by 2025. Currently, day visit clinics are squeezed into the single-story hospital complex, while dental, optometry, and behavioral health services are spread across the street and around town. YKHC recently scored best in the nation in their proposal to the Indian Health Services Joint Venture Construction Program. If they advance, IHS would provide staffing and operation funds when new facilities are built. A team is working to design a 130,000-square-foot, three-story, $250 million expansion that would house outpatient clinics and connect to the 35-year-old hospital, which would be remodeled. Winkleman says the building would help transform the patient experience and reflect the region's cultures.
I'm not interested in any shoeboxes anymore. What we need to do is really get towards having all of our patients comfortable in our facilities. It is extremely important for me that our patients, when they come into a facility, that they feel welcomed and that they feel comfortable. in being there with them and their families. Part of doing that is ensuring that the building represents our three cultures out here appropriately.
The new design would allow for integrated care where physicians, nurses, and other staff work more closely and stick with a group of patients over the long term to ensure continuity in care.
And this is something that's been developed over the last 20 to 30 years in healthcare. It's something that's very successful. It's a best practice. It helps when you can design the facility around that. And so that's what we're trying to do right now, is to make sure that we come up with an integrated care model that's really patient-centered.
The expansion could provide 200 additional staff to join, freeing up providers to visit patients at the region's many small clinics in remote communities.
This is not just going to affect Bethel. Every single one of our villages that has a facility, this will enhance those services. It will also create better access to services as well. By getting more physicians and more dentists, we'll be able to send those out to our villages more often and get back to having village visits by our physician team.
Before any shovel meets dirt, Winkleman says the project has to complete an agreement with IHS and clear many logistic challenges to finance and prepare for a new facility. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Before Dr. Ted Mala became the first Alaska Native to attend medical school and return to Alaska to practice, he learned about traditional medicine from relatives in the region of his childhood home in Buckland. Dr. Mala recently retired from medicine after more than 40 years. He believes deeply in the power of traditional healing, but he also makes a clear distinction between it and shamanism.
They would go into trances and they would use spells and things like that. And that was another form of healing for some people. But it's really important we not confuse traditional healers with Hollywood and with the misnomers that are out there about shaman and about forms of healing. It's much like the legend of, oh, you're from Alaska, you must live in an igloo.
When you went to medical school, what did you think of the way doctors were trained in that setting?
Well, you know, I went to medical school for my first 2 years in Mexico. I wanted to learn Spanish. I wanted to learn another culture. I wanted to see how people live. And I noticed down there they were using a combination of traditional and modern medicine. The fact is, in traditional medicine in Mexico, it's somewhat limited because a lot of people don't have any money. And if you prescribe medicine or an x-ray or blood test, you could be taxing them to the point where they can't eat for a day or things like that. You have to really think of all kinds of ways to help them help themselves without the batteries of tests we do here and all those kinds of things. So healing comes in a lot of different ways. And I tell people, you're responsible for your own health, nobody else.
Was the traditional healing clinic always part of the plan with South Central and ANTHC, or how did it get started?
Traditional healing really kicked off in terms of the system when South Central Foundation was founded. And there were a number of efforts to find out who's out there and to bring them together and find out how we'll incorporate them into South Central. I was at South Central when this effort mostly began, and they asked me to coordinate it. And our first tribal doctor was Rita Blumenstein, and our second one is Lisa Dolchek, and it moved on from there.
Why is traditional healing needed? What's missing from Western styles of clinical medicine that you need this additional role of traditional medicine?
The whole world is asking that question. The business of alternative and complementary medicine is in the billions of dollars. And all people, not just Alaska Natives, but all people are looking for a better way to do things. And traditional healing integrates well as preventative medicine with allopathic medicine because it encourages people to do something for themselves, not just be passive and say, give me a pill, give me a shot, and fix it for me. I don't have time for the pain. Well, that's really crazy because The pain to me is like a red light on your car, and there's two ways to fix it. You can cut the wire and the light will go off, or you can actually go and get it repaired. Well, same with health. You either do something for yourself or be very passive and just die or be crippled. And so many things are preventative.
You were the first Alaska Native physician to come to Alaska once you'd received your education and practice here. What was that like? When was that, and what was that like for you?
It's something I would not recommend people to do, being the first of anything, because you become a role model, which I never wanted to be. I just wanted to be myself. Hopefully, I've given strength to people to pursue our career. I work with the WAMI program very closely. And by the way, the WAMI program is now going to include some alternative medicine and some classes in traditional healing.
What would you like to see happening in the next decade in the realm of healthcare for Native people?
Well, my dream for Native people, as well as all Alaskans and all Americans and the whole world, is to take more responsibility for yourself. You know, when a person goes to, at least through our system, to family care, you have about 15 minutes and you don't have much time. And if English is not your first language, you need to write down things and write down your questions, because those 15 minutes pass really fast. And I also tell students that ask me all the time, what should I do, so on, I tell them, you need to find a mentor. And find that mentor and someone that can guide you through years of experience on the best route to take. You have to make the decision ultimately, but using a mentor in your life, whether you're young or old, doesn't matter, is very precious and helps many more things make sense.
Dr. Ted Mala recently retired from South Central Foundation's traditional healing clinic after 4 decades. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Karen Simmons in Fairbanks, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, and Ben Matheson in Bethel. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Kivalina and Kotzebue, and Annie Fight from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Pat Yak is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Alaska Children's Trust, working to prevent child abuse and neglect by encouraging all Alaskans to take small steps that can make a big difference in the lives of Alaska's children. Information at alaskachildrenstrust.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Children's Trust. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.